ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 27 एंटाइटल इंद्र एंड सुरभि ऑफर प्रेयर्स. टेक्स्ट नंबर 1.
श्री शुक उवाच गोवर्धने धृते शैले आशराद रक्षिते व्रजे गोलोकाद आव्रजत कृष्णम् सुरभि शकर एव च. श्री शुक उवाच गोवर्धने धृते शैले आसाराद रक्षिते व्रजे गोलोकाद आव्रजत कृष्णम् सुरभि शकर एव च. श्री शुक उवाच गोवर्धने धृते शैले आसराद रक्षिते व्रजे गोलोकाद आव्रजत कृष्णम् सुरभि शकर एव च.
Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shri Sukadev Goswami said, Govardhane, Govardhan, Drite, having been held, Shaile, the hill, Asara, from the rainfall, Rakshite, having been protected, Vraje, Vraja, Goloka, from the planet of the cows, Avrajat came Krishnam to Krishna, Surabhi, Mother Surabhi, Shakara, Indra, Eva also, Cha and. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Vraja from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The word Golokat here indicates the material planet called Goloka, which is filled with exceptional cows. Surabhi went joyfully to see Lord Krishna, but Indra went fearfully. As indicated by this verse, Lord Krishna had to adopt extraordinary measures to protect his Vrindavan associates from Indra's obnoxious and offensive attack. Certainly, Indra was ashamed and also nervous about his future. having acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma, who then ordered him to take along Surabhi from the material Goloka planet and go to see Krishna.
Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sujivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasandubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are in a section of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is most relevant to our lives, especially because this talks about the concept of how to relieve oneself from the effects of aparad, offense. That thing which takes away taste from spiritual practice is what is the concept of offense. Here, two personalities are going towards Krishna. Surabhi, mother Surabhi, the cow, and Indra, the king of the demigods. But both of them are approaching the same person with two different mindsets, two different moods, and two different expressions on their face. So Surabhi, she is going to Krishna joyfully. And Indra is going to Krishna fearfully. So the reason Surabhi is able to go to Krishna joyfully is because she is going with a guilt-free consciousness because of her purity. And Indra is going to Krishna fearfully because he is carrying guilt in his heart due to sin that he has committed. So when one commits sin, then the natural consequence of sin is that there is fear of what is going to come, what is going to happen. So when you commit sin, you seem to have confidence. But the moment you finish committing the sin, confidence goes away and guilt comes in. So here is a devotee who has just committed something that he is not supposed to commit. And he is in the state which any devotee who commits a sin comes in. So here, in the Gita, we find Krishna saying, in the 7th chapter, Esham tva antakatam papam jananam punya karmanam tve dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante maam dridavrataha. This concept of dridavrata, which means somebody who is able to practice devotion with determination. How does it come? Krishna says, Esham to antagadam papam jananam punya karmanam. So somebody who practices spiritual life with a lot of piety, which means avoids sin in this life and in his previous life, such a person can practice Krishna consciousness with determination. Otherwise, our desire to practice Krishna consciousness may be there, but the determination to practice Krishna consciousness will not be there. So, you will always find yourself in a conflicting situation. I want to do it, but I just can't do it. Something is forcing us not to practice seriously. So, that's what happens when one commits a sin. The determination goes away. Sin is not as much dangerous as aparad. The word aparad means aparadha, which means that thing which takes you away from Radha, that thing which takes you away from the mercy of Srimati Radharani is aparad. Just like if somebody is driving a car and it's a heavy, stormy night, rain falling, fog covering the whole place, and a person is driving. So if the driver, he doesn't put on his wiper and doesn't put on his headlights and he's driving, so the speed will be very less naturally because he doesn't know where he's going. But if he turns on his wiper, the speed will be a little faster. So, but when the sun rises, as soon as the sun rises, the rain stops and the fog dissipates. There is clarity and you can go fast. So similarly, when one commits sin, it's like a fog coming in front of us. You can't see which direction you're going. So spiritual life cannot be fast. Your speed will slow down naturally as a consequence of that. So, when we take precaution of avoiding that sin, which means using a wiper, using a, you know, light, whatever it takes to avoid the blur vision, then you can, your speed will increase slowly. But the moment the sun comes up, then you don't have to take any measures on your own. Which means, when a person is living a sinful life, his vision is blocked of progress. So he's not able to progress at great speed. The moment one gives up the sin and allows the light of spiritual Krishna consciousness to dawn on him, then there is clarity. Then you can go at much faster pace. So sin is one part, as I said. But the second part is aparad. While one is driving, even when he's driving at a great speed, he picks up a quarrel with somebody else. You know, two drivers, typically you see in India all the time, you know. On the road you'll find a big group of people standing and two people fighting in between. It always happens. So the natural consequence of a fight, when two people fight, when somebody blasts another person, is that the police fellow comes and detains both of them for hours together in the police station. So the result of aparad is that when you commit sin, your speed is slow. But when you commit aparad, your car stops. The police detains you for many hours together. So, when the whole concept of aparad is that your spiritual life stops. Even when one commits sin, spiritual life will go on. It will go at a much slower pace. But when one commits aparad, spiritual life will stop. And when we commit too much aparad, then spiritual life will take a reverse turn, U-turn, and you will go back towards material life. So, when we talk about the 10 offenses against the chanting of the holy names, the first offense is inattentive chanting, which is considered to be like practically the mother of all offenses. So this mother gives birth to 10 children. So the mother is inattentive chanting, inattentiveness in spiritual life. Inattentiveness in spiritual life gives birth to 10 children, which we know as the 10 offenses. Actually, if you notice, each of these 10 offenses is actually the result of inattentiveness only. If you take, when we talk about the third offense, taking the, you know, orders of the spiritual master very lightly, what is it? Inattentiveness in understanding how important the order of the spiritual master is. When we take the holy name of the Lord to be something mundane, what is it? Inattentive in understanding the greatness of the holy name. When we any of these 10 offenses when you take, the root of these offenses is inattentiveness only. So basically, whenever there is inattentiveness, all these 10 offenses are visible. Now, when one commits these 10 offenses, when one offends the holy name, what is the process of relieving oneself of these offenses? There is only one process. That is what Indra is doing here. And that is what Brahma is recommending here. The only way, which is the only respite to come out of the offense against the holy name, which includes inattention, is when we fall at the feet of the holy name and beg forgiveness. So what Brahmaji is recommending Indra to do is exactly what one is supposed to do when one commits aparad. Fall at the feet of Krishna and beg forgiveness. So Narada Muni, if you study the way he was preaching, he was preaching to Mrigari. So Mrigari, he was a sinful person. But in spite of him being a sinful person, he became a pure devotee because Narada Muni's grace was there. So when there is sin, still the mercy of the devotee can come on that person. In fact, the mercy of the devotee comes on the person who is most sinful only. The devotee is trying to find who is the most sinful person and give mercy to that person. Like Nityananda Prabhu, typically, he finds the most sinful and tries to encourage them. In the initial days of Krishna consciousness, when the preaching started in LA and many other places, Jayananda Prabhu, one of Prabhupada's very, very senior disciples, he would take great pleasure in going to the bar and preaching inside the bars. What he would do was, his preaching technique was very unique in the bars. He would go inside the bars and cook halwa for the, you know, all the drunkards. And while cooking halwa for the drunkards, he would preach to them. Of course, from our perspective, we cannot understand what it means to cook halwa for the drunkards. It needs to have really good compassion, you know. So, when somebody is sinful, devotees don't really mind that. But when somebody is offensive, the devotees stay away from that person. So when there is sin, when somebody commits sin, like Mrigari, Narada Muni, in spite of Mrigari being a sinful person, he preached to him, he helped him come out of that sin. And he got eradicated from the sin. But when one offends the devotee, there is no other respite, practically. The only respite when you offend devotees is that, fall at the feet of the devotees, fall at the feet of the holy name, and beg forgiveness. Indra offended, no one knows how many devotees. Not one, not two, millions of devotees. So naturally, the only way he could come out of that offense was when he could fall at the feet of Krishna and beg forgiveness. You can't do anything to undo the offense most of the times, because once the offense is done, it's done. The only thing that you can do to undo an offense is regret. And this concept of regret, and when you pray to the holy name, that's the concept that is there practically across, whether we have offended or not offended. If you don't have taste for the holy name, it means that we offended the holy name some way. And the only way we need to do, only thing we need to do to come out from this offense is regret. And when we pray to the holy name, O Naam Prabhu, please somehow or other help me come out of this offense. And then there is a chance that the holy name may forgive us. Just like I gave this example of this driver when he is driving a car at a great speed and he picks up a quarrel with somebody else and the police stops the car from moving. Now, typically if you see in India, what is the way to get out of the situation? The easiest way to get out of the situation when a police catches you is beg forgiveness. If you start arguing with the police, then you have had it, you know. Like a couple of weeks back, one of our friends, you know, he was trying to be compassionate. There was a car parked outside the gate of our temple. Some devotee's car, they had Jagannath's photo in it and all that. And this man was a new devotee. So he saw the towing vehicle coming and taking the car away. He said, devotee's car and I am also a devotee, so I should protect. Krishna's devotee should be protected. So he started fighting with the towing vehicle people, you know. He started telling that, come on, you can't take this is Krishna's devotee. And the towing vehicle, the wrong area he is parked in. He said, no, you can't take. And he started fighting like anything. So he somehow got into the Kurukshetra mood. And the result was that they took the car away, and they took his license away, and they took him to the police station also. And then when he landed in the police station, he realized that I am in trouble, you know, because now he couldn't fight anymore. And the police, they filed a complaint against him that he is trying to stop them from doing duty. And he had to pay a fine of 2000 rupees to come out of that. So the worst thing you can do with the police is fight. And the best thing you can do is beg forgiveness. Even if you have not made the mistake, if you beg forgiveness, there is a good chance they will leave you. Right? So the only way, the best way to get out of the concept of offense is beg forgiveness. And the moment you beg forgiveness, there is a relief. There is a respite. So Indra here, he made a miscalculation of who he was. So when we compare or confuse fame with success, there is a problem. So Indra very much confused his fame with being successful. So fame and success are actually nothing to give and take with each other. Like for example, once Walt Disney was asked a question by a reporter. They asked him, how does it feel to be a celebrity? He said, it feels good. It's fine when it helps you get a seat in a football match. You know, if you get a good seat, that's where it helps you. But he said, it does not help me to make a good movie. And it definitely does not help me when fleas sit on my dog. Because I'm famous, it's not that the fleas don't sit on my dog. In spite of me being famous, fleas sit on my dog. So fame and success have nothing to give and take with each other. So Indra was famous. But just because he was famous, he misunderstood that he was also successful. So the whole concept of Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name, is we consider and we put the center of the chanting, the center of the process, as God's holy names. And around the center of the process, everyone is dancing to give pleasure to that process, to the holy name. But when we put ourselves in the center and the holy name is put on the periphery, then what happens is that we are considering ourselves to be the success. So the whole concept of Sankirtan, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu propagates, is a concept of taking yourself away from the center and putting Krishna in the center. Indra, he wanted to put himself in the center of Vrindavan. The only person who is in the center of Vrindavan is Krishna. And he felt, I am so famous. He received an offering once a year from the Rajavasis. And that once a year offering made him think that he is the center of Vrindavan. So Krishna, you know, is the center of Vrindavan across. But when Indra tried to replace Krishna and put himself in the center, then naturally what happened was that when the, you know, in a circle, when a center is disturbed, when the center, you know, it shakes, what happens? The entire circle gets disturbed. As soon as the center was tried to be disturbed, Vrindavan got disturbed completely. And naturally, Indra had to face what he had to face. So here, to the extent that here Indra's sin has been called as obnoxious and offensive. Now, why is Indra's sin considered to be obnoxious? Offensive, we definitely understand. But why is this word obnoxious used? The reason is very simple. When somebody is doing something against his nature, then that is considered to be obnoxious. Like, for example, if somebody who is extremely, like in the Ramayana, there is an example of Mantra. The way her mood is shown actually shows what the word obnoxious actually is. So she was hunchback, ugly looking, extremely old, but she somehow had this thought process that I am beautiful. And she used to wear I mean, especially after Bharat, and after Kaikeyi, you know, managed to exile Ram, she started decorating herself from top to bottom with unlimited amount of gold and wearing all kinds of cosmetics, trying to cover her hair with all kinds of garlands. So sometimes some people don't really have any sense of what really beauty is, or what really enhances beauty. Sometimes people feel that you put too much gold, you become more beautiful. So this concept of obnoxious is a concept where you don't understand what brings out beauty, and you try to do something, from the eyes of the world you are obnoxious, but from your eyes you are beautiful. So Indra his sin is called obnoxious because the eternal nature of the Atma, of the spirit soul, is to glorify Krishna and not to glorify one's own self. So because Indra tried to change that, he tried to glorify himself and not glorify Krishna, his act is considered to be obnoxious. So when the living entity, he goes against his nature, then the living entity becomes obnoxious. It doesn't really impress. So from our perspective also, the moment pride comes in, then it makes us forget the essence, and it makes us focus on the external. So here, Indra, as soon as he became proud, thinking that I am so famous and therefore I must be successful, he immediately put himself in the center and demanded success, demanded attention, demanded fame. So when somebody is proud, then you forget the essence and you start focusing on the externals. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a story of Soma. When Soma, the moon god, he performed the Rajasuya sacrifice, the Rajasuya Yajna. From the perspective of the world, he was the king of the world now. But the result of that pride was that he thought he can do anything. And he kidnapped the wife of his own guru, Brihaspati, Tara. And, you know, it started in practically a worldwide fight, you know. Shukra, he took side of Soma. All the demons came against on the side of Soma. And all the demigods were on the side of Brihaspati. Lord Shiva came on the side of Brihaspati. And there was a heavy fight. Now, if you see from one perspective, Soma started doing a Rajasuya sacrifice, proclaiming to be the king of the world practically, and proclaiming to be somebody who is supposed to protect Dharma. Rajasuya sacrifice is meant for that. And as soon as he finished the Rajasuya sacrifice, he started acting in an adharmic way. So the reason is because he didn't put, if you compare this with what Yudhishthira Maharaj did, as soon as the Rajasuya sacrifice was over, Yudhishthira Maharaj put Krishna in the center, put Krishna on the throne and give him the offering. So when you put yourself on the throne and expect the offering, then what happens is fight starts. But the moment you put Krishna on the throne and give him the offering, then he deals with all the problems. Shishupal started a fight as soon as Krishna was put on the throne. But Yudhishthira and everybody else didn't have to deal with it. Krishna dealt with it. But here, when Soma put himself on the throne, he had to deal with it himself, you know. And practically he lost all his companions. All the demigods went on the other side and demons came on his side. So when you put yourself on the throne, the natural result of putting yourself on the throne is that all the offenses come on your side. And all the devotees go on the other side because they see you as obnoxious. That's what happened with Indra. Indra put himself on the throne thinking that he is the Lord of Vrindavan. And as soon as he put Krishna away from the throne of his heart, all the obnoxious things started happening in his life. So here we find the solution to all offenses, or, you know, the disease of obnoxiousness. What is the solution to it? The solution to it is the spiritual master, Guru. Indra, after doing so much, he didn't know what he is supposed to do now. Because till now, he carried out everything which was under his plan, which he thought is right. And everything failed. And now he came to Brahma, who is considered to be the Adi Guru. So Brahma told him what to do. What did Brahma tell him? Take a devotee and go to Krishna. So when there is the solution to the disease of false pride, false ego, is a spiritual master. One time there was a king, and this king had a dream. And in the dream, he was sleeping in his palace. The palace was well guarded. And in his dream, the king had a thought that a jackal was coming and biting his toe. And in the same dream, he saw that his enemies have conquered his kingdom. And then he saw that enemies have conquered his kingdom, his toe is bitten by a jackal, now he has no kingdom, no friends and relatives. He's trying to run around and he has no money now because enemies have taken over. So, but still his toe is infected, his toe is bitten by a jackal. So he's running around and trying to find a doctor who can help him cure his toe. But nobody wants to help him because he has no money. And finally he runs into the forest and he finds one sadhu, one saint over there. And the saint helps him, treats his disease, and he becomes alright. So this analogy is compared to, the king is compared to us, and the knight is compared to ignorance, and the jackal is compared to the false ego, which is biting us, and the enemies are compared to our senses for conquering our fort, and all the people in this world are compared to selfish people who don't want to help us because we don't have anything to offer them. And the saint who helps this king is compared to the spiritual master. The spiritual master has a solution to the bite of the false ego. But then, that solution comes only when you feel helpless and when you realize that nobody else can help you. So till one feels that somebody can help me or I can help myself, the wealth of this world can help me, till then, the spiritual master doesn't come. Spiritual master comes only when there is helplessness, and which has to be, complete. People of this world are actually waiting to cheat us, and the spiritual master is actually waiting to help us. But till a certain extent, we don't realize that the people of this world are waiting to cheat us. We always think that people of this world are waiting to help us. Just like there was one man who went to a park, and in that park he saw that all the benches were full, everybody sitting on it. So he thought of a unique way of getting some space. So he started looking at the sky, and he was looking for a long time. So 2-3 people got up and they started looking along with him, and then he went and slept on that bench. So people of this world are like that, so they want to show that there is something unique for you, but what they are doing essentially is that they are cheating you in some way. The spiritual master doesn't play a role like that. The spiritual master is there to help us in our endeavor. So the role of Brahma is to show Indra the path. So Brahma, what he did was, he saw that Indra was confused. He saw that Indra didn't know what to do and what not to do. And what he did was, he showed him the path. But it's very interesting when it comes to Brahmaji, the way in which Brahmaji is helping Indra. Brahmaji, he didn't interfere between Indra and Krishna. The role of the spiritual master is to facilitate, not to take over the role of the disciple. The role of the spiritual master is to show the path, not to walk on the path. Because the disciple has to walk on his own path. The spiritual master is a guide, is a pointer. He shows, go this side. So, most people of this world who want to control disciples, control people, control followers, they feel that what it means to lead is pull the fellow along with you. I go ahead and I keep pulling that person and he has to walk behind me. But Brahmaji is typically showing what a mature guide will do. He shows, do this. And he remains detached. Whether you want to do it or no is up to you. Unfortunately, when we start taking the role of trying to micro-monitor what a disciple does, then what happens is that we tend to create disturbance. But from another perspective, we see what Brahmaji did has a very interesting angle. So Brahmaji, he did not interfere, because when there is misunderstanding between two people, only a person who is pure-hearted can resolve such misunderstandings. Brahmaji told him, take Surabhi with you. Why did Brahmaji tell him to take Surabhi along with him? Because sometime back, Brahmaji himself had offended Krishna. So when he himself had offended Krishna, he felt, I have no right to go and do that role of mediating. So he said, Surabhi is the right person because she is pure-hearted. So he sent Surabhi. So the qualification, these are two qualifications that are needed to help mediate, you know, when there is misunderstanding. The first qualification is that you have to have a pure heart. And the second qualification is that you have to be loved by the person who is offended. Krishna loves cows. Like Radhana Swami Maharaj is talking about how every place in connected with Krishna is connected with Go. Govardhan, Goloka, Gokul. So practically Krishna loves the cows. So Brahmaji felt the only person who can actually help mediate the difference between the two is Surabhi, the best of the cows. So Brahmaji himself committed an offense, therefore he didn't want to get in between. Here, you know, when we have this English saying which says that every saint has a past and every sinner has a future, it very strongly reflects in this place. Because Brahmaji is a saint right now, but he had a past. You know, he has a past track record of offending Krishna. And right now, Indra is supposed to be a sinner, but he also has a future. He can be relieved. So in this one episode, we find both the things happening. So which actually shows there is hope for us. Right now, we don't know whether we are in Brahmaji's role or in Indra's role. But in either role, we have to remember the past and the future. If we are in Brahmaji's role, and if you are not doing any offense now, if you are not doing any sin now, we have to remember, at some point in the past we did it. But Krishna is so merciful that he has relieved me. Devotees are so merciful that they have forgiven me. And therefore I have a present now. At the same time, if we are in the role of Indra and we are performing a sin, we should also remember that every sinner has a future. There is hope for us. We do not get depressed. We do not feel that I can't do anything, I am dead, my bhakti is gone, you know, I just have no hope in my life. No. There is hope at every point. So, the typical example of mediation, of how, you know, somebody who needs to be loved, at the same time somebody who needs to be pure-hearted, is in the Samudra Manthan pastime, when there is a difference between the demigods and the demons. The Lord appears as Mohini Murthy. Everyone loves her, you know. And naturally, everyone trusted her. Whatever you do is best for us. So this concept of bringing Surabhi in between is a very interesting concept from the perspective of how when one performs an aparad, performs an offense against somebody whom, you know, you don't have a relationship with, then better involve somebody whom that person loves. And when you reveal your heart to the person whom that person loves, and this person recommends, then there is a great chance of being forgiven. And therefore, the whole concept of aparad starts with you being, you know, you losing the favor of Radharani. The only way we can redeem it is by approaching Radharani. Radharani is supposed to be the personality who is supposed to mediate between us and Krishna. When we offend the devotees, when we offend the holy name, when we take shelter of Radharani, there is a great chance that she forgives us. So, the result of sin which Indra committed, the result of sin is two things. Indra was ashamed and he was nervous about his future. So when one commits sin, then these two things come in picture. There is shame, there is a feeling of guilt. But more than that, there is insecurity about the future. Spiritual life is like walking on a razor's edge. And when we walk on a razor's edge, we have to be always be careful that we can get cut at any point of time. So this feeling of insecurity or nervousness is good for a devotee. But when this feeling of nervousness or insecurity comes after committing a sin or offense, that seems to be like a dark future. But when this kept in mind while walking on the path of spirituality, it actually can save us from the dark future. So Indra, we find here, he was filled with shame and remorse. But then, if you compare the mood of Indra with the mood of the gopis in Vrindavan, so Indra is ashamed of what he has done, but the gopis were shameless. Now, why do we find that the gopis are shameless? What is the meaning of shamelessness of the gopis? The shamelessness of the gopis is from the practical material world perspective. From the mundane perspective, the gopis are shameless, quite shameless actually. Because they just abandon their families, they just abandon their duties, middle of the night going to the forest to attend to Krishna's calls. It's actually quite an act of shamelessness. But the act of shamelessness of the gopis is the result of having not even one iota of sin in the heart. And in spite of being shameless, they were not nervous about the future. They were not insecure about what is going to happen in the future. None of the gopis were ever insecure about what is going to happen to us in future. None of the gopis analyzed and discussed, what if our husbands don't accept us? The Brahmana Patnis, when they just walked into the forest, they never thought whether our society is going to accept us in future or no. They just walked. They just acted shameless. And in spite of acting shameless, they were absolutely not nervous. The reason is because shamelessness, shame and nervousness come in a person when there is a personal hidden agenda in it. But in the case of the gopis, the Brahmana Patnis, they were shameless, but at the same time they were not nervous because they had no agenda in between. The only agenda was how to please Krishna and how to serve Krishna. And the natural consequence of when you allow Krishna to control your life, allow Krishna to dominate your life, is that Krishna takes care of everything else. So, insecurity is due to wanting to control the future. And the whole story of Indra, he wanted to control his future. He wanted to control, have more security over the future. But the result of that was, he lost security of the present. So Krishna, and this is a very beautiful statement that is mentioned in this purport, Krishna is ready to undertake extraordinary measures to protect his devotees. It's an amazing statement from the eternal perspective. If you study the whole concept of Rukmini Haran Leela, this is what it shows actually. The whole concept of Rukmini Haran Leela is a concept of how Shishupal, Rukmi, who is Rukmini's brother, is a constant companion of Rukmi. Just like in our life, our constant companion is the mind, the conditioned mind. So when the mind is having a hidden agenda, its own priorities, then what happens is that the priorities want to keep us away from Krishna. Our conditioned mind wants to keep us away from Krishna. And the natural result of wanting to keep away from Krishna is that unlimited anarthas come in picture to claim us. So Shishupal and all these other demons, they wanted to claim Rukmini. So when a conditioned mind thinks that it will keep the living entity away from Krishna, what it actually is doing is that it is keeping the living entity close to the six anarthas, the demons. But when the conditioned mind, rather than thinking of keeping the living entity away from Krishna, starts planning to allow the living entity to come closer to Krishna, then the demons cannot come close to the living entity. So Rukmini Haran Leela, the whole concept is that Rukmini is praying to Krishna, my dear Lord, save me from this entanglement of the conditioned mind. Save me from the entanglement of these anarthas. So the natural result of what Rukmini does, of the prayer that Rukmini does, is that Krishna is ready to undergo unlimited trouble to save a soul from protect his devotees. So what is the protection that Krishna gives Rukmini? He travels all the way from Dwaraka to Vidarbha in one night. Unlimited distance, but he covers it in the matter of one night. Even the best of Rajdhanis cannot travel that distance. So he traveled all that, showing that he is ready to take trouble. Now, Krishna could have easily disappeared in Dwaraka and appeared in, you know, in Vidarbha. He didn't do that. He actually rode on his chariot across. Why? To show that he is actually undergoing trouble for to protect his devotees, to save his devotees. And that is the hope for us. I'll end by talking about one particular pastime of the Lord, which is very interesting from Indra's perspective. Though this is a very esoteric pastime, if you convert that esoteric pastime in a practical understanding, it relates to our life. This is the pastime of tax collecting, which Krishna does in Vrindavan, where he stops the gopis from, stops them from moving further. Sometimes he breaks the butter pots, sometimes he steals the butter pots. So most people feel that this is a very esoteric pastime, which we can't talk about it. But we can talk about it if we see it from our perspective. So Krishna, what he does is that he hides in a particular place, and when the gopis are walking, he throws a stone on the pots. Some of the pots are filled with butter, some of the pots are filled with milk, and some of the pots are filled with yogurt. And as soon as the stone hits the pot, the milk starts falling, the yogurt starts falling, everything gets wasted. The gopis are angry. So one time the gopis of Vrindavan, they decide that they will punish Krishna. So they are hiding, and Krishna comes with 3-4 of his friends, and thousands and thousands of gopis come out, and they surround Krishna, and all the friends run away, and Krishna is left alone. So they want to harass Krishna. They put the pot on his head and they start throwing stones at it, and Krishna gets completely drenched in milk and butter. So he is kind of humiliated. So now this is a very esoteric pastime, but if we see it from our practical perspective, what Krishna does with the gopis is what he does with us. We are also carrying a pot on our head, and we are also attached to our pot. Just like the gopis were attached to the pot of butter and yogurt, our pot is a pot of papa, ghada made of papa, sin. And we are carrying that on our head, and we are attached to it very strongly. And Krishna is hiding somewhere. Sometimes he does it himself, and sometimes he does it through his devotees. He throws a stone on our pot. But we are so attached to that pot, we become fearful when the pot breaks, and all that dirt, papa that is there, that leaks away. So what we need to understand from this particular pastime is, Indra is filled with a pot of papa, sin, of committing so much offense against the devotees. And what Brahmaji is recommending is a process by which that pot of sin can get broken. What is the process? The process is, first thing, we need to regret, and the second thing, we need to allow a devotee to interfere in our life and allow the devotee to bring us close to Krishna, so that he eventually breaks our pot of sin and we get liberated. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna. The disappearance celebration of Gaurakishwardas Babaji Maharaj will start at 11:15 a.m. 12:30 p.m. there will be Pushpanjali, and 1 o'clock there will be Prasadam.